This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you. In your town, your suburb.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
If one old school heavy metal band, Iron Maiden, wasn't enough, that's okay, because when they come here to play in November, they're bringing Megadeth. But just don't bring your phone. Iron Maiden are performing a 50-year anniversary tour, but they are politely requesting that you do not bring out your phone, you do not film, and you do not use your phone during the gig. And this is something that we're seeing more and more. Are you happy with that? Ed Sheeran is playing tonight and tomorrow night. What if fans weren't allowed to film him? Is this a generational divide? Is it just older musicians who are asking people not to film? Or is it simply polite? Do you film a gig? And why? Do you actually watch it back? And if you are filming, do you miss the moment and annoy the people behind you? But up next, Ron Barassi Way. Yes, Brunton Avenue is to be renamed. You've been hearing about it this morning. But did they get the location right? Should you be able to walk Ron Barassi Way? Is this the right spot? And should you be able to walk it for it to be of any significance? 1300 222 774.
On 774 ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Rochelle Hunt.
What a terrific thing. What a great thing. Now, Ron Barassi, he changed the game in so many ways. Now, did you say Brunton Avenue? What's that? I just noticed Ron Barassi Way.
So that's Ron Isco from the Players Association speaking with Bob and Charnel this morning. What do you think? Is it the right location? And for a road to be named after somebody influential, should you be able to walk it? I mean, Brunton Avenue, by the way, you know, he gets downgraded. What happens? Is Brunton Avenue renamed and does that move somewhere else? That's probably a conversation for another time. Big story behind him. But should you be able to walk it? It is just an area that you drive. Dr. Ben Rossiter, former CEO of Victoria Walks. Ben, when we look at names that are named, streets that are named after famous people, laneways, they're often places for tourists, often places you want to walk. So the Brunton Avenue, I mean, it's a busy section. It does curve around the side of the MCG. However, you can't really walk it. Does that matter?
I think it does. I mean, you can walk it after a game, a big game at the G when they shut it so people can get to the station, but people are usually rushing to the station so they don't stop. I think it's important. People like to explore urban areas and connect with the things that interest them. And when we're talking about the notable people in our lives, I think it's important to be areas where you can walk, because people, it's the most popular activity in urban areas particularly, and you really want to connect and, you know, read about and hear about. And I think of some of the other notable namings, like talking about footy, and by the way, football players are a bit overrepresented.
They have
namings,
a lot, don't they?
They do. But Danaher's Way,
yeah,
which is the bottom of the William Barrett Bridge, which is a wonderful name for that bridge. But you get to learn a bit about, Neil Danaher when you're going a plaque, or Chrissy Amphlett Lane in the city off Little Bourke. You'll have a plaque about Chrissy, so people can go there, if you like, sometimes and pay homage to them. But you don't.
And you can get additional information. Yeah, that's right. Because, yeah. I mean, Jim Steins has a bridge named after him in Docklands. The idea that you can walk, you can read, you can take in the information, I feel like that is a moment that is lost?
Definitely, it is. And I think of some of the other ones, although I don't think she has a plaque, but Maura Merker, who has Merker Lane down in St Kilda, which I think is largely invisible, but I think of her when I go to the wonderful mural she did at Flinders Street Station near Princess Bridge. So it's things when I think of people like that, I want to go where you get a sense of them and who they are. And, you know, going back to Ron, he was about physical activity. at the highest level. And I don't think you'll be too physically active driving down Brunton Avenue.
Do you know what I find bizarre is that there are other streets and there are other walkways around the MCG. And we just know of Brunton Avenue. We use it, drive it all the time as someone that either lives or commutes through Melbourne. But that's actually coming at the expense of Sir William Brunton, who is a former Lord Mayor and businessman who died back in 1938. So a man of significance that had influence over this city, and is being dumped. Like, couldn't we have had both?
I have mixed feelings over this, because nearly all our major streets and roads were named in the 1880s, and they were named after businessmen, politicians, notable people. Some of them, if we look back, might even be a little bit dodgy by now. But why can't we change and get a bit more contemporary? Otherwise, they're there forever. And the people who have done significant things, particularly in our public spaces, can be a little bit invisible. So I'm kind of leaning towards, well, maybe we should look at changing and updating to something more contemporary. We don't need to keep all, you know, our forefathers, and I say fathers because they're nearly all men, just like statues and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I know. There's a text here that says, I'm not doubting Barassi's influence, but it's just another bloke being recognised, and a sportsman for that matter. And once again, influential women are being overlooked and forgotten. It's so true.
It is. And I mean, the other ones, First Nations people. I mean, I mentioned the William Barrack Bridge, which is one of my favourite places to walk in Melbourne, because you get stories of people as you walk across the bridge. And this morning, I didn't know about this, but I found out about Warrior Women Lane, named after First Nations artist and activist and broadcaster Lisa Belair in Carlton. So that's sort of thinking, oh, well, that's really interesting. I think I'll have to go for a walk past there and see if there's anything that recognises her work.
Is this something that around the world, Ben Rossiter, I know you're now the former CEO of Victoria Walks, but you're a man who loves a good walk. Do people put this into their itinerary when they're travelling to go, okay, well, there are roads and paths and laneways and parks and bridges of significance and people who tell the story of that city or suburb?
Yeah, they do, but I'm trying offhand trying to think of names of particular people, but there are particular, even modern, you know, bridges and lanes and things that people will go to because they've heard about them. I do think in Melbourne, like there's probably equivalents overseas, but Chrissy Amphlett Lane, I know people do go there to think of her and her work, which, strange, there's not one in Geelong, given that she was a Geelong girl. But, you know, so I'm sure there are around the world, there will be places, you know, you've just jumped to mind, Jim Morrison's grave in Paris. Mm. I think people have gone over the decades to go and pay homage to him, just like probably Karl Marx in London. I think people do that as well. So they do go to places of significant people which connect to their interests. So I think we could do more of it.
It's interesting. There's text here that says, Rochelle, I'm not sure when you're stuck in traffic jam if you're going to be too worried about the street name. That's from Paul. And another from Eleanor in East Brighton. Isn't there already a Ron Barasik Park in Docklands? Do we really need another landmark for another white male? Just finally, Ben Rossiter, the weekend is ahead of us. The weather's going to be glorious. Where are you planning on walking? Any nice walks this weekend?
No, but I am next weekend. So I'm heading to Adelaide for WOMAD, and I'm going to be doing some walks on the way back in a few different spots. But this weekend, they're more local walks. So I'm going to be walking, I think, along the Capital City Trail. I want to walk into Docklands and see if I can do a loop round to the city. So more local walks. I've been doing a lot of local walking over the last 6 months or so.
Oh, it's so good, isn't it? And that idea halfway through where you're like, I'm not exactly sure where I'm going, but I feel like I'm walking in the right direction.
Yes, getting lost in cities is exactly. Just a fabulous thing to do. You let the city emerge, the neighbourhoods emerge, you see different things, different gardens, different people. Getting lost is fabulous.
Oh, a suburban walk is the best, isn't it? Where you just dot around and look at people's front yards and gardens and what they're doing, and I just find that so enjoyable. Ben, thank you. Always lovely to catch up.
Pleasure.
Dr. Ben Rossiter, the former CEO of Victoria Walks. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk about Ed Sheeran. Of course, he's playing at the moment. He also catches the train. This is a man who actively tries to get on trains and not planes because he believes it's better for the environment. So what do you make of that? And also, Iron Maiden are coming here in November. They're bringing along their buddies Megadeth, so prepare yourself for that. But they're also saying, don't bring your phones. They do not want it filmed. They do not want your phone out. This has come in from Anthony, and it says, I can't stand it when people are holding up their phones to film a concert or a musical performance. It's just disrespectful to the other people in the audience, and you can't see the act. I absolutely hate it. Mark's in South Bank.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, it's not a generational thing for a photo for filming concerts. I went to I've gone blank now. Sorry.
Someone young, anyhow. Yeah.
No. Someone old. Engelbert Humperdinck.
Yeah.
At the art centre, and the person in front of me had two phones out the entire concert filming. Drove everyone crazy.
Yeah. I was wondering, though, if it was the older acts that are saying, don't, you know, they've probably got nothing to prove and they don't necessarily need to make the money. And they're like, well, just don't film it and enjoy the moment. So that's probably more of what I was getting to. But good on you, Mark. Thank you. Chris is in Traralgon. Hi, Chris.
How are you going?
Good. What do you think? Do you film a concert and then watch it back?
No. I think it's pretty rude and disrespectful to the people behind you.
Yeah. And have you ever said anything?
Nah, I'm not that type of person, I did think it was took away from the moment. You weren't enjoying what you were looking at. You're still watching it through your phone, and how are you going to enjoy the moment?
Exactly. I'm like you, Chris. I just sit there and stew about it and then think about all the things I should have said afterwards, but I never really have the guts to say it at the time. Chris, thank you. Ryan Egan from Double J coming up next.
On 774 ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Rochelle Hunt.
I feel like there is just one after the other of 50-year anniversaries of old-school rockers that are deciding to pull on the leather pants, come out for one last time. Iron Maiden are performing their 50th anniversary tour here in November. They're bringing along Megadeth for the ride. What a double act. Ryan Egan from Double J. First things first. Iron Maiden and Megadeth, there are some excited metal fans out there.
Yeah, yes. It's a big one. It's it's Christmas for metal fans coming early in November.
Is it hair metal or real metal?
I mean, this is metal. Right. This is like 70s and 80s metal.
You've got to be into it.
The real metal stuff. I think Megadeth are kind of like, this is sort of the last hurrah for Megadeth. Could be the last time we get Iron Maiden here. They have come here plenty of times before and people love them. They're iconic metal bands.
Are they all the original members or have a couple dropped off?
Oh, God.
The Purge, literally.
Oh, my gosh.
Doesn't matter. It's Iron Maiden.
Does it matter?
No, it doesn't.
It's Iron Maiden.
So they've come out. We're going to talk about Ed Sheeran in just a moment and the fact that he caught a train and he's playing in Melbourne this weekend. There's so much to love about Ed if it's legit. But Iron Maiden are a part of this growing number of artists saying, put your phone away. Don't film it. So if we go back, I think the ones that I could see off the top of my head, Tool have done it, Ian Moss, Bob Dylan. Back in what I found hilarious was Prince, right, back in 2013.
Oh, yeah. No flip phones at my concert.
And guess who his sponsor was?
Oh, no. Nokia?
Samsung.
Yeah, classic. Love it.
Imagine that. Put your flip flops.
Maybe that's why he did it. He's like trying to balance, the ludicrous nature of a sponsor of your concert like that.
But it's becoming quite a thing now. Is it generational? So Ed Sheeran tonight, I can't imagine he would ever say, hey, could you?
I think people have their phones out for Ed. Yeah. I've been to a concert recently which was very quiet. And it was a mix of crowds, so older, but a lot of younger Gen Z, and there wasn't a lot of phones. I think it was a respectful thing, and I've been to concerts before where it's just I've had someone's phone right in my face, like for almost the whole thing, and had to say something.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did it get ugly?
Had the little tap and just point to the phone and do the, you know, the slitting the throat kind of thing, you know, like, it's not really a vibe. It's kind of cringe. I think maybe there's a, hopefully this next generation of younger music goers will actually kind of go, you know, this is cringe to do this. Like, this is something that boomers and Gen X do. And they're
Katie
so
Lang
cringe.
A long time ago might have even said something in some of the smaller gigs. Does anyone watch it back? Like, is anyone going home that night and re-watching the gig?
Well, I think some people do. And maybe that's the way they can remember the show.
You're sounding a bit judgy.
Am I? Me? I don't, personally. But, you know, it's a nice way to remember something. Mm. So I do like to do a little bit of filming, take a photo or two, pop it up on social media and be like, oh, my gosh, amazing concert tonight, brilliant.
You but
know,
then that's
a,
it.
A taser and a taster and a teaser. But I don't need to be sitting there filming the whole thing with my phone out. And I'm definitely not getting my iPad out and holding it up.
People don't do that, do they? You've seen it.
I've seen an iPad before. Yeah, yeah.
Far out.
I haven't seen a laptop for a while, but that would be
a
awesome.
Prince concert back in 2013.
Engelbert Humperdinck, with the laptops out.
This, Rish, is worse at school music concerts. I think it's a great learning tool for the kids, but the parents should move to the back of the room to film their child. I'm shocking. I always forget because I'm actually enjoying the moment. I don't think I've filmed any of my daughter's school concerts because I do love moments like that so much. And I am a big believer that the moment your phone comes out, you're worried about, oh, am I actually recording and I should zoom in? And you do miss the moment.
Yeah, you do. And it's annoying being at a concert watching someone do that as well. And you're like, oh my gosh, you're going to do it. I think Bruce Dickinson from Iron Maiden has for a long time been really anti-phone. So it's no surprise to hear them talking about this for this particular tour. They're also banning phones at a concert they're doing in Paris that they're filming as well. And they've got a system there where phones are being put into little bags as well.
Like at school.
Yeah, kind of. So when you go in, you put it in a little bag. But I think it's just for the people on the ground so that when they're filming, you know, and doing those shots of the crowd, it's really people enjoying themselves rather than just a sea of people holding up phones.
Wow, I like that. Paul says Bob Dylan has been banning phones for a number of years now. Also, Jack White has banned phones. Bob Dylan's just always cranky anyway, though, at the best of times. So Ed Sheeran, there'll be phones out at that gig tonight and tomorrow night. He's arrived in Melbourne from Sydney and everyone's talking about the fact that he caught a train and not a plane. But he's spoken publicly about doing this and doing it for the environment. Does it, like, what? How do you read into this, Ryan?
I think it's great. I mean, I catch trains. Do you catch trains?
I catch trains.
If I went to Europe, I'd catch a train.
But I don't have enough money to own my own private jet.
Well, I think it's interesting. I saw some of the media coverage of this, which is this idea that someone who has so much money and would be flying a lot. Like he's admitted he takes private jets if he sometimes needs them for promo tours. He obviously, his crew and gear and everyone's flying with planes. But when you have that opportunity to do something that you believe in that, you know, is about environmentalism, is about, you know, kind of just taking a bit of a deep breath as well as an artist, I think it's really
great.
You
can actually chill out a little bit because it is less stressful and there's been big conversations across Melbourne this week about planes or trains, very fast trains and, you know, the upgrade of Melbourne Airport. And most people are saying I'd prefer to catch a train. This is Ed Sheeran talking with Louis Theroux, I think like mid last year.
We try and fly completely normally as much as possible. We were flying back on a Ryanair, I think, from a gig in Italy that I was doing last year, but all of my fans who'd been at the gig were
fine. You were fine.
We had our
own new private jet all the way.
No, I'll do it very, very rarely, and it's only if it's like work. If I'm like doing a thing in Germany, I have to be in LA the next day.
You don't have a private jet?
No. I like doing trains. I like
I could have afford one.
Yeah, but it's not really about that. I kind of like I like the environment. I like trees.
Hey, I like trees. That's Ed Sheeran talking last year with Louis Theroux about the fact that he chooses when he can to catch the train and not the plane. But he's not even like up the pointy end. He's getting on like Ryanair and budget airlines.
Cattle class.
Dude's coming back from like Bucks weekends. He had his kids. He was talking about the fact that one of his kids, you know, had a toilet accident on him while he was on the plane and people are coming up and asking for autographs. He's like, you know, I've got a situation here with a lot of wee on my pants.
Yeah.
And I just think that's incredible.
I think it's amazing. I think, you know, let's normalize being normal for people who we see on stage. We might go spend a lot of money on the tickets, who are wealthy. Let's normalize them doing normal things. You know, I've seen images, for example, of Paul McCartney on trains, and you hear about people who are quite well off taking public transport. Why shouldn't they?
I know, we always get shocked.
Why shouldn't they do that?
When someone like Paul McCartney goes to a supermarket.
Oh my gosh, they have to live. They're real people. They're human beings as well. You know, just because someone's famous, and to be honest, like, a lot of fans really can't stop themselves from getting into the private space of these people. And I understand why that would be confronting or difficult, but also let's normalize these people who are actual real human beings.
The connection between environmental cause and music too. I mean, you can look at, well, not even environmental cause, but just social justice, you know, yes. Billie Eilish, Ed Sheeran and the stance that he's making, not just with planes and trains, but he's also rewilding a whole section of the UK. He's buying up land. But that's sort of like, that's been around for a long time. That's not relatively new. If you look at Bono or John Lennon or Peter Garrett.
Yeah, I think it's good. And it's definitely not new. And I think, you know, artists in particular have, particularly when they've got causes that they're really passionate about, they really need to put their money where their mouth is as well. People look to them as people to admire and who are doing the right thing. And if they're, you know, quite famous as well. I mean, yeah, I think we should hold people to these high standards, but also, you know, catching a train from Sydney to Melbourne is a pretty normal thing to do. I mean, if he came here in November, he could take Bruce Dickinson's plane, Ed Force One, which is what it's called. He's a pilot. So maybe Ed Sheeran and Bruce Dickinson from Iron Maiden need to hook up and work out some, you know, bit of plane sharing arrangement or something.
Rick's in Moonda. You want to talk about phones and gigs? G'day, Rick.
Hi there. Yeah, not a phone, just a story from quite a while ago now. A friend of mine was at an Eagles concert in Melbourne, and he was sitting there and they're, you know, ready to start and all the rest of it. And the woman behind him had a backpack and she reached into it and brought out a tambourine. And she was with the intention of playing with the band. And he turned around and just looked at her and said, "Put it away. I didn't come here to listen to you."
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, I so love
I'm obsessed
that.
By the tambourine at the gig.
Oh, mate, could you imagine that? You know, just busting out a pair of bongos, you know? Why not?
The next concert, there's like a sign on the door, no tambourines.
Tambourines away. Oh, but maybe she was really good. You know, who knows? I doubt it. If you're carrying a tambourine around,
it's not good. It's not a good sign.
There's big question marks above that, Rick. Thank you. Nick Cave said to someone, "Put your beep phone down mid-song at a recent concert," and I really appreciate that. Even Beyonce, I think, did that back in 2013. She was calling people to get up on stage and someone was too busy on their phone and she's like, "I'm asking you to get up here and dance with me, dude, and you're too busy on your phone." I think she said something like, "Put your damn phone away."
Yeah, I think it really enhances the experience of being at a concert where you can be in the moment. I think if you've got the opportunity to take a couple of quick photos, do a little bit quick filming, don't try to get it in the way of the people behind you. Keep it a little bit tight and short. Pop it away and enjoy the moment. I think that's the way to go.
Ed Sheeran tonight. Couple of big gigs.
And tomorrow. Yeah, huge, massive at Marvel. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people getting into
that. It wasn't that long ago he was here.
Didn't play the MCG. Was it last year, the year before? What is time, Rochelle?
When you're our age, it just blurs together. Wasn't he here last week?
Yeah, wasn't it on Tuesday?
I think so. You're not going, I gather.
I'm not this time.
No, you did last week.
Of course. I pace myself.
Enjoy it. Put that tambourine away. Ryan Egan from Double J. If you've seen someone bust out something like a tambourine, bongos at a gig and try and get involved, we'd love to hear from you.
On 774 ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Rochelle Hunt.
Jacinta Parsons joining me in a couple of minutes' time. But if you're thinking about maybe running the Melbourne Marathon, if you've run it in the past, well, there are some changes that are coming in this October. And basically, it's bigger is better. Marcus Gale is the event director of the Melbourne Marathon. Marcus, this year, you're basically doubling in size and it's going to be a two-day program.
Yeah, Rochelle, thanks for having us on the program, firstly. But yeah, look, there's some big changes. We haven't probably changed the format of the event for probably near on 20 years since we first moved to the MCG. So now we've got to a point where moving across 2 days has become almost essential to manage the sheer demand that's booming in running right now. So, yeah, it's quite a significant change and probably a really good one for the city.
I find that so wonderful because running a marathon's hard, Marcus. Like most people, you know, they're long and you need to do a lot of training. And I know that there's different lengths and stages of the marathon and you can sign up for different events. However, what a great sign that so many people are wanting to get out there and be fit and active that you have to increase the marathon by, you know, you have to double its size basically.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I can talk to the fact back in November when we put our ballot out, there was over 50,000 people that registered to participate in both the half and the full marathons. We've got a capacity of 36,000 for those two events, which is significantly more than what it's been in the past, and we still can't fulfil the demand. So running is booming. The health and wellness scene is alive and well, and that's a great thing, I think, for everyone involved. And we're really excited about the changes. I mean, it's been a long time coming. I think we've probably been working on this for at least 18 months in terms of, talking to various government agencies and whatnot that provide us with the permits. For the first time, we're going into the city of Bayside. So, we've certainly broadened our footprint. And it's just great to have everyone on board supporting, you know, an event that is anchored in health and wellbeing.
So will the routes change dramatically? Sounds like there's a lot going on where you are, Marcus, if you have to.
Yeah, I'm actually in the Carlton Gardens right now because we also run the Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show, which is coming up next month. So we're planning for that too. But
What
I was saying, in terms of the course direction, certainly there are some changes. We're going to go in a different direction. Essentially, we're running the same areas, but different direction and different time starts. Full and half marathon will remain on Sunday, what we're doing is we're moving the 10, the 5 and the 3K events, which will go on improved road-based courses on the Saturday morning. So
right, okay.
It's just been spread out across the whole weekend and really take over Melbourne.
So they were sort of clashing together a little bit, putting in those shorter runs then with the big kahuna at the end.
Correct, yeah. Effectively what we were doing was trying to get as many people through on a shorter amount of time just becomes a tipping point of capacity. So, it's a really good development and just means more people will be able to participate in the various events. And I think we're expecting over 10,000 people to come from out of state. So it's a significant, boost for Melbourne as well.
There's a text here from Rowan who's in Blackburn and it says, I'm so happy with the changes this year, Rish. So far, it took too long for the half and the full. They used to overlap. It caused chaos for the faster runners. This will be a really great change. If people, Marcus, want to jump onto the Melbourne Marathon's website, look at the changes, look at what they can sign up for, even if they're doing a 5 or a 10K, they probably need to get across some of these changes.
Yeah, absolutely. So today we've obviously made this announcement, but all of the maps and course routes are all available on the website, so they can check those out there. And we've just announced the sort of 10, 5 and 3K events are all now on sale. And last I checked, there was over 1,500 people that had registered for the 10K. So it's going to move quickly as well.
Good to hear from you, Marcus. Thank you.
Great. Thanks very much.
Marcus Gale, the event director of the Melbourne Marathon. So you can jump onto their website to see what those changes are. But we've been talking about just a growing number of bands and artists saying, put your phone away, put your tambourine away. Dallas is in Cranbourne North. Hi, Dallas.
Hi. So I was just calling in to say I work as a support worker, so I support people with NDIS and acquired brain injury. And people I support will sometimes film because it helps with either visual impairment or for the purposes they've got maybe memory issues. So just a perspective out there, because I have been, and when people have sort of yelled out abuse for people filming, not understanding the reason why they've got their phone out.
That's really interesting, Dallas. I wonder how you could find a way to make sure that that's still all right. Like, and the last thing you want is to say, here's a segregated area, because that's just not what you want. But at the same time, some kind of information so that, you know, your workers and your friends and your clients can film and people don't get upset at them and think that they're doing it for other reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it does really enhance the experience for certain people. So, yeah.
Would you take a tambourine, Dallas?
Tambourine? No, I probably wouldn't take a tambourine.
Yeah, step too far.
Yeah, I think so.
Dallas, thank you. Coming up next, Jacinta Parsons is joining me, and we're going to talk about something that many of you probably don't want to talk about.
On 774 ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Rochelle Hunt.
It's Friday. Jacinta Parsons joins me every Friday, where we talk about something that we think other people are talking about, or we talk about something, JP, that we don't understand and we need people's help on.
Like, that's everything.
It is.
You know
everything.
What is wonderful in this modern day of broadcasting? Mm-hmm. You don't have to know very much.
No,
actually, I shouldn't say that. That's
you
like,
just need to ask
that's
the right
poking
question.
The bear. Yeah, okay, very good.
Do you film at gigs? Like, do you bust out your phone?
Very, very rarely. Like, I do it every time, only at a small period.
You did use your phone today, though, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Firstly, can I say, I'm very excited that I'm going to wake up with you. I've asked you so many times if that we could have sleepovers, and you've been like, oh, a bit busy, oh, I've got things on.
Top and tail, you know, your bed's too small.
No, and my feet, you know them, so let's not do it. But I get to wake up. You're going to be co-hosting while Chanel Vella is having her beautiful child and living that
life. Gosh, she looks beautiful.
Oh. Do you know what? You know what someone told me I looked like when I was pregnant?
What?
Danny DeVito.
Because there was Danny DeVito's hot. All right.
Yeah, there was a film where he was nude in one bit, and I was like, oh my God. And also, someone said I looked like a short, fat Mexican man who played guitar.
That would be me.
I looked terrible.
I waddled like.
You know all those beautiful women that get all the photos?
Yeah,
I was like,
no.
Do you know that my sister-in-law saw images of me because they didn't know me when I had my first child? They both literally jumped back and screamed.
Yeah.
Not even joking. That was the intensity of the reaction.
I don't know how she looks that gorgeous. I was like kicking doors open. My boobs were so big. It was just not a good sight.
I, though, today tested your co-host, Bob Murphy, because we're mates. Mm-hmm. But how good are mates, are we? And I assumed that this would be a chess move that would be significant for me to make in our friendship. He was walking across the road and I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to call him. I'm going to see that he's going to look at his phone and not answer it, and then Bob's your uncle, I'll be able to say. And I started.
How dare you? Imagine.
So he didn't answer it, first up.
He did or didn't?
He didn't. And then as I'm leaving a message saying, guess what, buddy? We are now at this point where we're at you.
I saw you.
He was calling me back because he just didn't know how to use his headphones to answer.
Boom.
Nice. It's disappointing and great all in one.
There's nothing worse than calling someone and you can see them and then they look at your name come up and they go,
it's happened. Ugh. It's actually happened. And it hurts so much.
We're going to talk periods in just a moment.
It's changing topics a little,
isn't
it?
There is no easy segue into periods. But here's the thing. Women get their periods. And there are households where young women are getting their first and older women are getting their last. And there is a lot of emotion going on in that household. Not just for the women, but for the dads and brothers too. But I want to have a chat to Blair, who's in Ivanhoe. Blair, do you film at gigs?
Yeah, I feel quite embarrassed now that after your conversation. And hi, Rich, and hi, Jacinta.
Hi, Blair.
In 2023, the Cause toured. They hadn't toured for 22 years in
Blair.
Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
And the tickets were expensive. I also had to pay for my partner at the time. And I actually had my iPad because the tickets were on there. And then I thought, you know what, I am actually going to proudly take some videos, not many, and and I have watched them back and I've enjoyed my
hang on, it was an iPad.
Yeah, big.
Yeah, I know.
That's like basically a cinema screen.
Did anyone get upset at you, Blair?
I was just going to say that. So someone did say, I didn't actually get in trouble, and all someone said was, oh, how did you get that in? And I'm like, oh, I just had my tickets on it. And so no one actually batted an eyelid. I was careful. I put it up just like I was very careful in how I did it. I didn't obstruct anyone's vision. I was very careful, but I was mindful, like, you know, I didn't want to ruin anyone else's experience. So I think,
Look, I think that's the thing. As long as you're respectful. All I want to know is how did you get it into your pocket? Like, that's huge to be carrying around your jeans. Get out of here. Oh, I was just joking.
No, it was down my pants, this is so it's okay. No, down it was in my bag. No, it was in my bag.
All right.
Blair, thank you. Tambourines, though. Imagine that. Imagine being somewhere at a gig and someone opens their bag and busts out a tambourine.
Do you know what I've always wanted to do as an interviewer is I play violin, and there's a few times where I thought, imagine if I learn the song and just pick it up and start playing, it would be horrific. Like, how terrible.
So anyway, this is not what we're talking about today.
Stop it.
I saw a little video of a mum had filmed her husband and her son getting ready in the morning. The door of the bathroom was just sort of open ajar a little bit. And I can't play it. I would play it for you, but that she put some really bad music over the top of it. Please and you stop. Can barely hear it. Anyhow. Yeah. So the dad and the son, he was probably 10, 12, something like that. They were talking about periods. And the little boy was asking questions. He's like, oh, right. So mum bleeds once a month. Is it just like when I get a cut and I need a Band-Aid? And the dad was like, no, it's actually more than that. And they had this really in-depth conversation about hormones. And the dad said, buddy, you got to learn about this because you're going to maybe have girlfriends, you're going to have friends, you've got siblings. This is something that you need to know about too. And we are in this environment now, JP, where for many of us, daughters are having their first period and the mums are having their last, and there is a whole lot of hormones and emotion going on
that are in conflict, I think, as well.
And conflict.
I mean, the hormones aren't friends. It's not like you're having a hormone party where mum and daughter go, oh, we feel the same. It's such an interesting time too, because I always kind of rail against this idea that the hormones make us this thing. Do you know what? Life makes us that.
Yeah.
And then the hormones allow us to really articulate the strength of feeling that we have about things.
But there are times where the hormones win, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's so true. Don't ever say that to my face.
No, well, I'm sorry, but sometimes the hormones do, and afterwards you go, maybe I overreacted.
Maybe all those feelings that I just had at my boss aren't exactly how I always feel about things. Look, I agree. I have a 13-year-old male in my home, and he is pretty educated. Most of his friends are female, and they were in the back of the car the other day, and she was sharing her period app with him about how her mood would be. So he actually just as a course of action would go, what is today? So she would say, okay, today is angry day or whatever, you know, so that he was part of her cycle and understanding what actually happens to her
emotionally. Doesn't that show the difference of where we've come, though, the fact that there's apps? So when we think back, so we're at a point now where we're getting our last period, maybe haven't had our periods, or we're like really nearing towards the end. If you think back to getting your first and how different it is now for young women and for people in a household, not just the conversations that are happening, like the fact that we're even talking about it
still
now.
Still feels weird, though.
It does a bit.
I want to know if people had a little bit of like, oh, talking about periods. Were there?
Yeah.
Saying what?
Oh, turning off.
It's funny, isn't it? Because it's such an enormous part of a female body's life. You know, to have that experience, it shapes so much. And as we heard in the news today, the rising kind of diagnosis of endometriosis, but the enormous amount of undiagnosis that has been going on. How women are in the world is so related to a cycle that comes up at this very young age when you've got to start managing it. Pain. I used to vomit every single time and just...
But you try to hide it. It's not hidden anymore.
I don't know that that's true. I'd like to know, but I want to believe that.
There's tampons in toilets at schools. You know, once you would have to, you'd hide your pad up your sleeve, up your jumper.
Oh, my God.
Remember that?
Oh, that's... bringing me emotion I forgot about that.
I just had an emotional response to that too.
I would love to know from any young women who are listening as to whether it is something that you can say, I've got my period, or this is my experience with it right now. I do know that my 20-year-old daughter in their share houses share their cycles and say, okay, this is my luteal phase, so maybe just give me a bit of space.
1-300-222-774. Are you in a household with first period, last period? And how different is it now when you think about when you first got your period to someone young in your life and how different the products are, you know, from period undies?
Oh, yes.
Could you imagine
how different how much our life would have been?
You'd play basketball because back then we actually had to wear, you know, like basically underpants on the court. And if you had your period and you wore pads, forget about it. You'd just say, can't play this week.
It's awful. Oh, it is. And I think we carry a lot of that. And I wonder whether still there is a difficulty across the generations. But let's find out.
Jacqueline's in Hampton. Good morning.
Hi, I'm actually a menopause mentor and an emergency medic, and I see patients every day, women who are going through perimenopause and menopause and dealing with teenagers in the house at the same time. So it's all about reframing the conversations and understanding what is hormonal change and what the effect is that you don't realise is perimenopause or menopause and having open discussions.
So what's the main thing? Like, is there a very similar conversation that happens all the time? Like, do you go, yep, you're not alone. People raise this with me all the time.
I actually have a big box of tissues because the women start to weep because they're feeling not like themselves anymore and they're dealing with teenagers who are pretty toxic at that point in their lives as well. But I try to reframe it that you're going through puberty in reverse while they're hitting their stride with their hormones. So the clashes can be really bad, and it's okay, you're not alone. I've had four daughters.
Wow.
and you know, this is to be expected. But, you know, the whole classic concept of just hot flushes is not just perimenopause or menopause. You can wake up with a frozen shoulder one day, but you need to tell your family that you're going through this and they need to understand it. The conversations we have with our daughters often are talking about how to get pregnant, how to date, how to deal with your periods, but we don't have a lot of conversations about what happens in midlife to us.
Yeah, so true.
In the 10 to 12 year period of your life that can be misdiagnosed as depression. It can be misdiagnosed as panic attacks.
And that's right. And we're learning.
Frozen shoulder.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I've got someone close in my life that's going through frozen shoulder at the moment, and it is not fun. Jacqueline, thank you. 1-300-222-774. You can text 0437-774-774. Justin says, women are amazing. My girls are amazing. Three in the house. We're navigating it all at the moment.
So many things to talk about with this because of its impact on our broader life. There's a really great text here, though, that says, imagine my poor little 11-year-old son has 14-year-old sister and two menopausal mums. He's learnt a lot. Do I tell that crazy story about my child who's actually unfortunately called Perry? And I would always say, babe, it's perimenopause, this, that. Hey, I'm really sorry, perimenopause. Mummy's whatever, perimenopause. And so he said, you know what, Mum, I really want to sit down and have a proper conversation with you about this over dinner. I'm like, have I made the best feminist in the world?
Yeah.
So we sat down at Mr. Lee's Malaysian and I started to go, you know what? It's such a relief to be able to get it off my shoulders and talk to someone.
Then
he stops me and he said, I am mortified because this was probably only a year ago and embarrassed. I thought it was your way of explaining how much you miss me because we're in a co-care divorced family situation, 50-50. I thought you were saying you feel perimenopause when you miss me. Then did he want to know anything about perimenopause?
No.
No.
Was he, and then he's like, too much information.
Like, Mum,
can I just eat my noodles?
Yeah, I'm not
please.
Actually interested in any of that at all.
Great conversation, girls. Winter Olympian Amber Glenn, yes, opened up about competing and having her period at the same time, how hard it was on every level. This is such a good conversation for her to have. We are seeing, that's from Kelly, thank you. Elite sportswomen are talking about it more and more. Swimmers, they're like, yeah, I won and I was on my period. And sport and younger girls and periods, I think there's been such a great transformation.
Because that's one of the spaces where girls just stop participating. One of the other things about the cycle that I have found so fascinating with women, maybe, you know, up to 10 years younger than me and possibly more, in fact, that when they start to go and be interested in having children, they are unaware of what their cycle is. Mm. So there's this ovulation window that you have to, we have to educate our 35-year-old friends on, because they have no idea that that's actually, because we get taught this blanket,
yep,
you will get pregnant.
In sex ed, when it talks about periods, I think they still separate the boys and girls.
No.
I think they might.
If you're a teacher, do you want to be separated? If you want, if that's a shock to your system.
But is, maybe do the girls want the boys there? I don't know.
I think ultimately they would want allyship in it and not to feel like they're being othered as a result, because I think that breeds that shame, doesn't it?
It does. Or does it make you too nervous? Yeah, do you need privacy? And do you not put up your hand and ask that question because you are worried there's a boy
who's going to laugh
next to you? 1-300-222-774. If you're a teacher, when you're going through sexual education, do boys and girls get separated when it comes to learning about periods?
This is a great text from Dax. Hi, Dax.
Hi, Dax.
Rich and JP, I was so not ready as a single dad for the emotional and dealing with my daughter. I'm so glad I had support during the first instances with bleeding. That's a lot of people's experiences, isn't it? Having to take on an understanding of something you've never gone through.
And something maybe that you've never been educated on yourself. Can you remember where you were and how you felt when you first got your period? Is that a too personal question for me to ask you?
No, I remember it very clearly. Mm. I remember Turner and Hooch was just in the cinema and I was reading this little leaflet.
How was that dog that big?
How is that a whole thing? That's the dribble one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the dribble brown one. Yeah.
Oh, man, anyway. It's only of Jake and the Fat Man. Anyway, so I was reading a little pamphlet secretly about what you do when you get your first period, and it was like, why don't you just take yourself off and see a film and relax and give yourself a treat? And I thought, I might go and see Turner and Hooch as a celebration and as a dealing with. I remember I was playing cricket with my brothers and my dad, and I came in and it was just horrifying kind of thing to say to my mother.
Yeah. I was on holidays with my cousins at Phillip Island. They had a little beautiful shack holiday house down there, and I spent every Christmas with them without my parents. They were back in Traff, you know, running the local milk bar. And I would just, I was hanging with my cousins, been to the beach and went to the bathroom and discovered I got my first period. I was too scared to tell my auntie, even though, like, I was super close to her and I'd been there all summer. So I walked, I think, a K to the, you know, toilet paper and your undies, that whole scene, and walked to the phone box.
I want to cuddle you.
Because there was no phone at this holiday house. So I walked to the phone box and rang my mum.
20 cents.
And probably, I think, reverse charges, not sure.
You get to do that when you get your first period.
And mum and dad, they were still together then, jumped in the car, bag full
of
pads.
Dad came as well. Yeah.
And they drove all the way to Cowes with a bag full of, you know,
so many pads for you.
So many pads.
You don't know what's going to be happening for your first time.
And my auntie was like, why didn't you tell me?
And I'm interested to know this. I think the fundamental question is, we felt enormous shame and we hid it. And I think we still carry that shame with us now. Is it intrinsically something private and secret and a little bit intense for a person to go through? Or is it culturally that we've been made to feel like it is quite an enormously big thing? If we're not seeing changes, then I think
we're seeing changes. I honestly think we do.
I want to hear. Tell us.
I mean, you see ads now that actually use, well, maybe not real blood, but it's red at least. Remember in our day, it was just blue. Like a,
that's right, like the chalk pen. In the
that
the Colgate
was
ad.
That was
still,
else.
I know, but, yeah, and everyone's happy and running around. That's how they used to sell colostomy bags to me back in the day when I had them, where everyone was just like climbing mountains. Really?
Really?
I'm not climbing a mountain now that
so
I've got a colostomy bag.
So I think that's why we've changed in that we're seeing tampons in free in school toilets. You're not having to hide them. We're seeing great new products and inventions being made. We're seeing real advertising. We're seeing boys talk about it. We've also seen a progression in perimenopause and menopause and the last period as well, which I think then as a result we start to talk about first periods. But this is like entire households are kind of going through this emotional
experience. We're not going to say anything.
I was going to say roller coaster. I'm like, you can't say
no,
roller coaster.
No, I don't think so. Elsie said here, and a really good point, Elsie, remember the gender divergent fams out there. And that would add a complexity to that experience for bodies that are going, you know, that have transitioned.
Janet in Malden says, my grandson did a puberty class in grade 5 with the girls. Okay.
And this, yeah, Lee in Sunbury also says that is what's happening in the world. Hopefully that's making for, because I think this is everything. I think when we can talk about this and actually make it possible for everyone to have feminine hygiene available, which we're addressing culturally, all of those things speak so largely to how we think about women in a culture and how comfortable we are.
And you don't have to avoid swimming lessons or, you know, when the school swimming whatever is on. What do they call those things?
Carnivals.
Carnival, thank you.
I'm not going to ask you this question, but I'm going to put it on the table. What? The time you used your first tampon.
Oh, it took me ages. Yeah, I was scared.
Oh,
but then I still wanted to play basketball, so I had to ask my friend Rebecca not to physically help me, but to like really explain it to me.
Yeah.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care, and we'll speak to you soon.